Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1-cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 199 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how did that feel to get back out to the field this week?
That was nice. And now that, so that was for college, now minor league starting, so that's even better. So it'll be a lot more consistent time at the field, which is definitely a good thing. So hit the matchup of number one LSU and number six South Carolina. So that was a good one. And we'll talk a little bit about that in the episode. Some intriguing names on that matchup for sure. So we'll definitely get to that. But yeah, it was good. It was an awesome game. It was a great atmosphere the entire game. And yeah, it just felt good to be in a good baseball environment again.
Yeah, I looked at some of the stuff you posted. It looked like it was a good game, good matchup, good environment. Hopefully I can get to the field soon. Like, Portland did have a home series, but who schedules a home series in Portland, Maine in early April? It's my question. So it was against Binghamton, which is the Mets AA. Didn't really have anybody I wanted to see, and anybody on Portland I already had seen last year. So I was like, all right, let me just not go to this series because, you know, night games, Maine, April, very cold. Then they go on the road for the next 2 weeks, unfortunately. But then I think that they're back on like that third week in April, like the 20th, 21st, whatever that week is. We got Reading coming to town, which is Philadelphia's AA. So maybe we'll get some seats in Mick Abel. I think it's Griff, I can't remember if Griff McGarry got signed there, if he's AAA, but some more players on that team that I want to see. So hopefully that'll be my first game of the year. Maybe I'll go to New Hampshire, see when some of their guys are lined up to go, but we'll see. But yeah, it's good to get warmer weather here. It's going to be 60s this week, Chris.
Nice.
It's going to be South Carolina weather. It's going to be up to, especially like, you know, first couple of days, like tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, it's going to be like mid to upper 50s. But then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it's going to be like highs of 65, 68, might even touch 70. So feels good, man.
Yeah, that we had a cold weekend here. It rained for like 36 straight hours. It was freezing cold, and luckily today was sunny and about 65. So it's nice to get back to that for sure.
I know, man. It's much needed. It warms the soul. Like when I was in Florida for that 3-4 days for first pitch baseball HQ event, like it was needed. It was just, it warmed the soul. It was good. I think I was battling a little bit of a cough back then, and it helped me feel better. My voice got better down there. So warm weather is just good for everything, including baseball. But all right, we have a pretty jam packed show today. We'll talk some our new top 10 dynasty prospects because Carroll and Henderson just graduated over the last couple of days. We'll get into some of that LSU South Carolina, talk a little bit about that, some early AAA standouts, some other young notable hot starts in the MLB level, a lot of fun stuff. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04, and our show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. We definitely appreciate all of that support on whatever platform you listen on. Those ratings and reviews do mean a lot. If you want extra work from Chris and I, check out Chris's Substack, my Patreon, and of course our work at Chris's at Fantasy Pros as well, and me over at FTN and RotoBaller. And before we get into the show, we want to say a quick word about our friends at Underdog Fantasy. If you sign up using the promo code TOOLSHED, you'll receive a 100% deposit match up to $100. That can be used for any of their fun fantasy games. I know Chris and I have been doing, both of us have been doing a lot of the player pick'ems right now. A lot of fun. They have so many prop, all the prop, different props on there, over-unders, fantasy points, all that fun stuff. So go check that out at play.underdogfantasy.com/P-the-toolshed. Again, promo code TOOLSHED gets you 100% deposit match up to $100. All right, Chris, let's start out with our new top 10 overall prospects here. Final, even though they were fun to rank, Carroll and Henderson have graduated both back-to-back days, actually Henderson first and then Carroll the day after. So we have a brand new 1-2 right at the same time. Doesn't really happen too often when both of the top two graduate basically on the same day almost. So new top 10. Who is that for you, Chris?
Yeah, so I actually had three. Miguel Vargas was in my top 10. He also graduated off. So it's nice to get a new crop of names. It's always great. And those were easily the two top guys in Carroll and Henderson. But I will say it was nice to have somebody else in the one spot. So I put Jordan Walker in the one spot. I think that's pretty clear at this point. He's in the majors. He's raking. He's smashed the ball at every stop. I don't need to go into much detail with him. I put James Wood at number two, which I think is probably interesting. I'm not sure many will go that high on him yet. I think there's that upside for sure with Wood, but his combination of contact plus power is just really intriguing. And when you look at Wood, when you look at a big 6'7" type player, you don't really think of him as a good athlete, but Wood's an excellent athlete. And so he's not a zero in stolen bases. The power is just insane. The contact is really, really good despite the long lever. So I think Wood will be the number one prospect in baseball before long. He just feels a little bit safer to me than my number three, which is Ellie De La Cruz, who Ellie has much more pronounced tools when you look at power and speed. I mean, the power I'd probably give to Wood, but Ellie's definitely got the speed edge. But there's the hit tool risk we saw him run concerning contact rates last year. Hadn't seen him this year. He's hurt. Hopefully he'll get back on the field soon. But I do think that if all clicks for Ellie De La Cruz, then we're talking about an easy number one prospect. Just not even close. He could be just an insane player to come up and just set the world on fire. So Ellie De La Cruz is three and Jackson Churio is at four. I put Jordan Lawler in the fifth spot. I wavered a lot on this one. After the top four, I kind of wavered pretty hard on a lot of the guys. I was like, does Volpe go higher because he's in the majors? And I don't know. I see him and Lawler as pretty similar, but I just look at Lawler and think he has a bit more upside than Volpe. So I went with Lawler in that fifth spot and Volpe in the sixth spot. Volpe was a tough one to rank. He fluctuated for me as high as two all the way and end up at six, which shows you this just a pretty big tier of guys at this point. I'd honestly say for me it's Walker than everybody else, where we're at right now. So the seventh and eighth spot were Kyle Manzardo and Curtis Meade. Both those were already in my top 10. So they just bumped up two spots with the graduation. So they stayed there. And then I rounded out with two FYPD guys in Drew Jones and Jackson Holiday, who I struggle to differentiate between, like, for rankings. Different players, of course, but both bring a high upside skill set. I think both have a solid floor as well. So that I'll run down the top 10 again. Jordan Walker, James Wood, Ellie De La Cruz, Jackson Churio, Jordan Lawler. And the 6 through 10 is Anthony Volpe, Kyle Manzardo, Curtis Mead, Drew Jones, and Jackson Holiday.
Yeah, so for me, it's, you know, Jordan Walker's easily number one. I think he's here by himself right now. And, you know, I've long said that I think he could be like 95% of J-Rod, which I still think that's true. I'm starting to think of it a different way. Like, is he the next Aaron Judge? That's kind of what I'm starting to wonder now. Like, you know, obviously, you know, so far he's been cranking the ball. He's high on every hard hit leaderboard, no matter what, you know, mile per hour threshold you use. Cranking the ball, has, you know, two home runs and a steal so far. You know, driving in some runs for St. Louis and hitting over 300 so far. Hasn't walked yet, or at least not entered. I didn't see if he walked today on Sunday or not. I haven't looked super deep in that box score. But just hitting very well. Quality contact is super elite. Not striking out too much either, which was kind of a little bit of the question mark coming into the year, but he's done very well there. So he is definitely, I think, just one by himself in that top tier. And then, yeah, I agree. Like, the next six and the next five for me, it's like tier two is very, very close. I do have Elliott 2, 3, Lawler 4, Wood 5, Churio 6. Could really order those. I'm good with Churio at 6. 2 through 5 for me, I could have switched it up any which way. I love Wood as well. I mean, look at the size, speed, athleticism with Wood. Performance has backed it up as well. Easily could put him at 2. Obviously, Ellie probably has maybe the highest upside of anybody in the minor leagues right now. You know, we're talking like Acuna, Tatis levels of power speed that he's shown, which is awesome. Seems to cut down on the strikeouts, obviously. I do, like Volpe at 3. And again, this is so hard. I Lawler, I think it has more long-term upside. I think he has got more power, some more speed, more, I don't know, maybe a little less speed, but more power. But Volpe, you know, not off to the, you know, not blazing a trail right now in the regular season as he was in spring training, but, you know, the speed is definitely there and could go 15-30 this year. And I don't think anybody would be totally surprised by that. And maybe even more stolen bases if he can get on base enough. So Volpe 3, Lawler 4, Wood 5, Churio 6. I still have Tovar at 7. I think the hype has kind of cooled on him, but there was nobody that was like screaming to get ahead of him. And I still think the blend of contact skills, power, speed, plus the course field boost that he gets keeps him at 7 for me. I do have Manzardo at 8, Grayson Rodriguez at 9, Curtis Mead at 10. I struggled a lot because Drew Jones is right there at 11 for me. And then I think it falls off a little bit down to, you know, the Cowsers, the Pete Armstrongs. I have Jackson Holiday in that next tier. You know, Tiedemann, Jason Dominguez, guys like that, Elijah Green. Jones was so hard, like that at 10 between Mead and Jones. You know, Mead, high floor, pretty good upside. Drew Jones, not quite as high of a floor, though. I do think, I do agree, he's not a huge risk, you know, fairly safe for his age at least, but higher upside. Could have gone either way. Jones was 10, but I bumped Mead ahead. And Rodriguez, I'm still very much in on. And I'm starting to rank pitching prospects a little higher. Like, I got, you know, Tiedemann's in my teens as well. So I think Rodriguez and probably Painter would have been right up there too. Like, Painter could have been flirting with top 10 before the injury as well. But, you know, really, really fun top 10. Walker probably, we're going to get a couple of these guys off the list soon too. Like, assuming everything goes according to plan, Walker and Volpe probably graduate sometime middle of May or so. Rodriguez, Tovar as well, could graduate by the end of May, maybe even sooner than that. Rodriguez, I mean, he's back up now earlier than I think either of us thought he would. But assuming he stays up, he's probably off the list, I don't know, sometime in June, maybe. So by, you know, end of June, we could have 3 more spots open up in this top 10, or 4 more spots, excuse me, open up in this top 10, get a few more names up in here. And by that time, we might be getting, you know, getting close to the next draft. We could have a couple new names entering high in our rankings here. But before we talk about that, let's go over to back over to Chris here with, you know, just some your live looks. Obviously, South Carolina, LSU, one of the most loaded teams in the college level we've seen in a long time. And South Carolina, very good as well. A lot of, you know, early round draft, you know, stock in for both of those teams. But obviously the two big names, Dylan Cruz, outfielder for LSU, and Paul Skeens, right-hander for LSU, who's kind of vaulted over Dolander as the top pitching prospect for the 2023 draft. What were your initial thoughts on both of those guys?
Yeah, those are the names that I would say that are most important to know right now. Hit on another name in a minute, but spent a lot of time before the game just sitting out there by the bullpen watching Skeens do all his, you know, pre-game routine and all that stuff. And honestly, one of the best pictures I think I've ever taken. I really thought it would get more run on Twitter. It was just literally a picture of Skeens throwing, and the entire LSU pitching staff, bullpen starters, are all just literally standing behind him, arms crossed, watch him. There's like, it's a group of like 20 guys, and everybody's just so focused on Skeens throwing. And I thought it was one of the best pictures ever taken. It was like so telling about like what it was. But yeah, so Skeens, he's consistent at 100. Like, the sad thing is there was a lightning delay that delayed the game for about an hour. So both Skeens and Will Sanders for South Carolina only completed 3 innings before. And it was really stupid. There was never a drop of rain. The lightning was about 20 miles away. Whatever. I won't get into that. But Skeens was, you know, consistently 100 miles an hour with the fastball. Has excellent changeup. It's about 86, 87 with good fade. The slider is about the same velocity as the changeup. And there's some of the movement on the slider is just insane. But overall, like, Skeens has been elite all season. And he was pretty good, but he hadn't allowed a home run all season. And he allowed 2 home runs in those 3 innings. He still struck out 8 in 3 innings. So 8 of his 9 outs were via strikeout. But Ethan Petrie jumped on him, who's a true freshman at South Carolina, who he could be top pick in 2025 draft. He's elite. And then Braylon Wimmer, senior shortstop, took him deep also, literally the same spot. And it wasn't even a bad pitch. So the home run that Petrie hit was on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball about belt high. I mean, Skeens just thought he would pump it by him, and he didn't. And Petrie just got all of it. Similar pitch for Wimmer's home run. But the stuff's really good. There's been talk, like scouts said, well, when he's on an MLB routine, like, he's not going to consistently throw 100. I get that, but he's still going to be high 90s consistently. So, like, we're talking if he's throwing every 5th day instead of consistently sitting at 100. If he's sitting at 98, who cares? Like, there's at that point, it's still elite when you pair the slider and the changeup that he has with that. And he's built like a tank, dude. This guy's massive. He's got a starter body, 6'6". I mean, just a starter workhorse type frame. And I would say that Skeens is probably the best college arm that I've seen in a long time. Like, I don't want to go too far back, but like, you look at the numbers and his strikeout rates, and it's like better than Steven Strasburg. Like, that's what we're looking at here when we look at like what Paul Skeens has done this year and the kind of strikeout numbers he's posted. Like, he's like a 55% strikeout rate. Let me get the numbers. He has 91 Ks in 47 and a third innings. And that's 172 batters faced. A 53% strikeout rate is what we're looking at with Skeens. So,
hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Absolutely insane. He's walked just 8 of those 172 batters, which is good for a 4% rate. So, I mean, we're looking at an almost 50% K minus BB rate. And this is the early season numbers were against whatever teams, but he's doing this now against SEC opponents. We're 4 weeks into SEC play, and we're facing the elite of the elites every day. I mean, probably, I mean, half the top 10 is all SEC. I think actually six or seven of the teams in the top 10 are SEC. So you're facing elite competition every single day, and Paul Skeens is still doing it. So I'm just impressed with what I saw. Cruz got exploited a bit, honestly. He didn't do anything in this weekend series, and it's a bit disappointment. He got, I mean, Will Sanders got the best of him a couple times. Sanders had him, I think, 2-2 in the first count, and then or the first at bat, and hit him. The second at bat, Sanders dropped a pretty nasty slider that Cruz chased out of the zone. Cruz grounded out. It just wasn't a good day. In other words, it wasn't a good series for Cruz at all, but we're still looking at a player that's hitting this slashing 5'10 batting average, yes, with a 645 OBP and an 882 slug. I think that this combo of Skeens and Cruz are going to go 1-2. It's kind of hard to imagine that they don't at this point. I mean, the Pirates do crazy things, but I feel like they're going to take Cruz at 1, and then I think Skeens will fall at 2. I think just typically how I see it falling. And to note that Cruz had not struck out much at all prior to this weekend. I think he struck out 3 times in 2 games this weekend because the rain canceled the third game. And he had just 13 strikeouts prior to that. So he ends up, he's 16 now. So super low strikeout rate still. But overall, I was hoping to see, you know, a little more of Cruz, but it's a small sample and he's elite. Like, he is what he is. Great in the field. He moves really well. Like, he got us some balls that I thought were going to be hits, and you know, some deep fly balls, line drive fly balls to the track, and he tracked down. So he's good in the field too, and that's just going to help his draft case. I just want to hit on Ethan Petrie, who people may not know. He's a true freshman, 18 years old at South Carolina. This kid's bat is insane. So far this year, 15 home runs. He's hitting 443, 504 OBP, and an 876 slug. So I think Petrie, with what I saw, I mean, he grilled 100 miles an hour off Skeens. His second home run of the game was on a curveball down and away, and he took it out of the park. And he almost had a third in that game, too, I was at. He pulled it foul by a little bit. But when you take Paul Skeens deep like that, then I don't know. I'm pretty impressed. And overall, like, Petrie's just been impressive. Dude's a big body. I mean, as an 18-year-old, he's 6'4", 230. He's built a lot like Brady House almost. And he's a very polished bat all around. So Petrie is in the early discussion to be at the very top of the 2025 draft. You don't need to know that for fantasy purposes, but that's just a name to keep an eye on.
I'm already thinking of, like, the, you know, there's always the, when a team is, you know, trying to get, you lose to get a certain player in that league's draft, there's always like a, you know, cute little term for it. I just thought of two: suck for Skeens or lose for Cruz. I mean, the lose for Cruz, at least that one rhymes. That's a little bit better.
Yeah. But.
Yeah, I think, is Cruz, for fantasy purposes, is Cruz still your 1-1?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, same here. And then Skeens has moved up. I mean, I think you can put Skeens as high as, I know, you know, obviously FYPD pitchers don't get ranked quite as highly as real life, but where can you see for FYPD looking ahead? You think, you know, top 5 for Skeens, top 10? I think he could be top 5. I mean,
yeah.
I think there's a case for him. You could probably, actually, as high as 2. I mean, I probably, right now, I'd have him, I think, probably 4 or 5. But I think with what he's shown this year, and like you mentioned the stats here, and he, you know, finished it off, 1.14 ERA, 0.61 whip. Like, he's putting up, outside of the walk rate, like, he's putting up Edwin Diaz numbers from, you know, Edwin Diaz from last year as a starter, giving up 21 hits. And 47 in the third innings, only 2 home runs overall, 1 hit batter. You know, like, the level of command and control this guy has, in addition to all of his bat missing ability, is just absolutely ridiculous. And yeah, early in the year, I was like, you know, obviously Skeens was right there. We talked about Skeens with Joe Doyle and that episode back in probably early February or so.
Before the season started.
But at that time, we were like, oh, Dolander. And Dolander's been, you know, good. He's, you know, not quite as good as we maybe thought. But I think we thought Dolander's going to do this. Skeens is doing this. He's vaulted over Dolander, even though Dolander's still, I think, probably top 10 FYPD for me. But yeah, Skeens is, he's must watch. You know, I don't care if you don't, you know, if you're not a big follower of collegiate baseball, that's fine. But he is must watch baseball just in general. It's, you know, tune into his starts any way you can, or watch replays or whatever. Like, Skeens is a very fun pitcher to watch. And Dylan Cruz, like you said, he's hitting over 500, over 600 OBP, like power, a little bit of speed as well, and the approach. Yeah, Cruz is probably going to be top 10. I'm trying to think of where. I know there's still a little bit, obviously, still some season to be played here, but I think we could see, especially with all the graduations we're going to have, we've already had and will continue to have leading up to the draft, I think you could see Cruz jump into the top 10 immediately. Like, I think both of us already put Drew Jones pretty close last year. If I recall, I think we both had Jones in like that, what, 12 to 15 range kind of initially when we put him into our overall top 500 prospect rankings. But I think Cruz is just as much upside and obviously is much more polished overall player than Jones is. So yeah, I think Cruz could be top 10. And heck, maybe if we get enough promotions, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to see Cruz top 5 initially. And it's crazy to say and think about, but the level of bat that he is, it'll probably be one that moves fairly quickly through whatever organization drafts him. So the proximity will be, you know, not too far away as well. I think you could see him top 5, and then the next tier of guys are probably, you know, the Langfords, the Clarks, the Jenkins, the Skeens, the Dolanders. They're probably in, I don't know, it's so hard to say, but 20 to 25, 30 range, something like that. But you know, what are your thoughts on where these guys could jump into overall rankings?
Yeah, I think, crazy enough, I think Cruz could be number one. I'm not going to put him there, but I think that that's the kind of talent we're looking at for sure. Because we'd say that Drew Jones has that upside. So, yeah, I'm kind of in the boat where I think that Cruz could slot number one spot. He's easily top 10 for me.
Yeah.
I think Skeens could today pitch out of an MLB bullpen and be really nasty. And I think, so where I think Skeens, well, I don't really put pitchers high in FYPD. Like, we're talking about somebody you don't have to wait long on who's already polished enough where he can just step in. And he's going to be fast riser through the system. And because of that, I think that he has a plausible to be top 5 and maybe even number 2, which is crazy because I've never even considered putting pitchers that high. But that's kind of how good he is, like, and how special. Like, I don't even think he's in the same conversation as Dolander and Hurston Waldrop and all these other guys at the top. Like, he's not in the same conversation. He's another tier above them. He's that good.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree there. And yeah, seeing Cruz, you know, he definitely could be up in that top 3 range. Like, you look at, so we're assuming Walker graduates and Volpe graduates. All right, so that leaves that remaining cluster of Ellie, Lawler, Wood, Churio. And I think you add Cruz into that. I don't see Tovar getting up to top 5. I don't see Manzardo top 5. I don't see Meade top 5. Jones, I think, could, but I don't. Does it happen by midseason this year? I don't know. So I think Cruz jumps right into that cluster. And I think it'll really, you know, see how these other 4 guys play up until the draft. But yeah, I think it's going to be one of those 5 as the new number 1 midseason. And Cruz could jump right in and take that. He's that good. So very exciting 2 players there. A lot of obviously great matchups. SEC baseball is the top. It's like, you know, SEC football, ACC basketball. It's like, it's the cream of the crop. It's the top of the top. So a lot of fun players on those teams. The LSU team, it's just so freaking loaded. It's absolutely insane. All right, let's move over to the minor leagues now. Some early AAA standouts. We're a little over a week into the AAA season, about, 9-10 days or so into the season. So we figured we'd look at some early standouts. You know, AA, single A just got started a few days ago. We'll look at some early standouts, you know, when there's been a lot more to games played, another week or so on those. But we do have, you know, again, still a very small sample size for even AAA, but some names are already starting to kind of stand out from the crowd here. You know, we've already talked about Brett Beatty a decent amount, and luckily his thumb injury on that swing a handful of days ago wasn't serious. He's back in the lineup already and probably is up soon. Like, Escobar is stinking up the joint in the major league level. He's hitting, after today's game, 125 with a K rate just over 30%. So Beatty's probably taking over there soon. But we got a handful of other names here, starting with Tyler Soderstrom, who I myself was, you know, not critical of, but kind of cautious of. I just don't trust Oakland's player development. And he was one that had like a little bit of a higher K rate, a little bit of a lower walk rate. But hey, he's making me eat my words so far. He's been absolutely crushing the ball in AAA. You know, he has a handful of home runs already. He's hitting for a high average, not striking out a lot either. So pulling up his exact stats here. I think he actually leads AAA in total bases so far. Yes, yeah, so far 32 plate appearances, 345, 375. So still not walking a whole lot. Only a 6% walk rate, 724 slug though, 5 doubles, 2 home runs as a 21-year-old in AAA. What are your thoughts on kind of Soderstrom long term? And do you think we see him with Oakland this year? I think we could. Like, Oakland obviously is terrible. Do they want to start his clock? I don't know. He'd probably step in and be like maybe their best hitter right off the bat, or at least one of the top two or three hitters in that lineup. So maybe some second half of the season redraft value too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he ended the year in AAA last year, so it's hard to expect that he would be there all season again. Like you said, I think he does step in this lineup and is just their best player. It's interesting. I've been tracking where he's been playing, and I assumed he would just make the move full time to first base, but he's actually catching more than he's played first, which I find a bit interesting. He's caught 4 games so far, been at first twice, and he's even DH. So I don't know. I assumed he was just going to completely move off the position, but maybe this is the A's showing their hand a bit that they're not fully bought into Shea Langeliers. And if so, Soderstrom's value, I think, is even higher for fantasy if he's got catcher eligibility. The bat's really good. And I don't think there's any questioning that at this point. The biggest flaw that he's always had is the ground ball rate. He just hits the ball on the ground too much. And this year, while a small sample, that has corrected. He's down to 35%. Last year, in high A, he was 44.7%. In double A, 48.5%. Triple A stint was just 38 plate appearances, but 58.3% there. He hits heavy amount of line drives. I mean, his sweet spot percentage has always been really high. The EVs are incredibly good on him. Like, his 90th percentile last year was near 107. This year, same spot. He's maxed out at 113.5 this year, averaging 95 miles an hour. It's just incredible power. He's got a really good feel for a contact in the zone, and he doesn't chase often. I mean, he ran like an 84% zone contact rate last year, which is very good, especially considering his age. And when you're not swinging and missing in the zone, like, I can handle a little bit of chase, and that's even cleaned up a bit this year. Now, I'm hesitant to talk about it too much because it is a small sample, but I'm looking at a 15% chase rate right now, which is very, very good. So I think Soderstrom's bat, like, we're looking at like a potential like 30 home runs. And I honestly think he could be a 270 hitter, and that'll play. I mean, it especially plays behind the plate, but even at first base, like, those numbers will certainly play for you.
Yeah, no doubt. And said the improvements he's made this year have been, again, while small sample size, have been noticeable and absolutely encouraging. And that's kind of what I was looking at. I was like, all right, well, I know the powers are like, there's never any doubting the power. That easily could be a 30 home run guy, even at whatever they call Oakland's ballpark now. O.co Coliseum, is it still that? I don't even know anymore.
No idea.
Whatever they call it, big ballpark, obviously. I think he still could be a 30 home run bat there, middle of the order, you know, guy, just because, again, they don't have anybody else, and he profiles as that anyway. Maybe he turns into, like, I don't know, like a Rhys Hoskins type, maybe a little more average, a little less walk rate, but somewhere's in that range where he's like, could be like a back end, you know, maybe he sneaks into the back end top 10 first baseman, or he's just outside of it. Maybe more of like a high end corner infield option. But yeah, if he's still catching and keeps that eligibility, maybe it's a situation where they split time and, you know, Langeliers catches some, he catches some, and when he's not catching, he's either DHing or first base, wherever. I could see that as well, just keep his bat in the lineup, because obviously he's a much superior bat to Langeliers, who's really struggled a good amount at the major league level offensively. So I could definitely see that. But yeah, he's definitely moving back up my rankings for sure. I probably dropped him a bit too far. I'll eat that, totally own it. But if these improvements we've seen early on stick, he's going to move even more and probably make an impact in Oakland sometime over the course of this summer. Moving on to the next name here, we'll go down to Ronnie Mauricio, who has, you know, been Chris's, what's a good term for you and Mauricio's relationship? Like, frenemy? No, I don't know. It's been such a roller coaster, obviously. And me too. Like, you know, obviously I wasn't as vocal about it with you and Mauricio, but he was one where, it's, and even to now, like, I still have the same concerns though. Like, we know there's a good power speed blend there. This could be like a 25 homer bat, got to approach his 20 steals, something like that. But even this year, I still question, you know, where does the average end up? Where does the OBP end up? He's never been a guy that walks a whole lot. And that's even the case this year. Let's see what the exact numbers are this year. Yeah, he's walking 3.1% of the time this year, hitting 323, but only with a 344 OBP. Also has, you know, 5 extra base hits and 3 home runs, though he's yet to steal a base so far this year, but he had a pretty good spring showing as well. And then you made the claim on, I believe it was Prospect 1, right, with Welsh's bold predictions that you think Mauricio could be top 25 by end of the season. I'm not like totally against that. I just wonder, like, the approaches, I think, is the, you know, what's going to limit. Is he going to hit for enough average? Is he going to walk enough, get on base enough? I think the power speed is top 25 level for sure. I just question, again, where does he get to with average and OBP?
Yeah, and so it's funny because when everybody was in, I was way out. And now everybody kind of was out. And this offseason, I was like, digging in, I was like, okay, like, I'm actually back in a bit. Like, nobody's questioning Mauricio's ability to hit the ball hard. He's done that consistently. He smokes baseballs for a living, and he's got the power. So I think your question's right. Like, average OBP, what do we get? I mean, last year he chased 40% of balls out of the zone, and that was kind of his detriment. He doesn't walk because he just swings so much, like, just chases so many pitches. He's hyper-aggressive in the zone, which is good, but it's not good when you're chasing 40% out of the zone. Like, that was one of the highest of any minor leaguers last year, especially of any top prospect. And so, winter ball, I watched him, and I was like, okay, like, this seems to be, like, a little bit different. And spring training, like, I was tracking the Savant numbers, and it was different. Like, he wasn't chasing hardly at all, and he wasn't swinging and missing. He was hitting for the power. And so far this year, it's kind of been the same thing. He's chased just 22% of pitches out of the zone, which is encouraging there. And overall, like, this is a 30 home run bat. Where's the average settle? I don't know. He's always going to play way down in the OBP league because he's just hyper aggressive swinger. But I mean, we saw last year, he was like 30-20 home run stolen bases. I think this is a profile that could hit 30 home runs and probably steal you 10 to 15 bags. Like, I'm not going to go out and say that he's going to be a huge steal source. He's a pretty big guy. He's a good athlete too. But I do think that Mauricio has changed his approach a bit and has not sacrificed any power in doing so. So for that reason, like, I'm really in on him. And I think you got to buy him everywhere at this point because I do think his stock's really going to take off. And I don't want to miss the boat on this one because the talent has been there since he signed all those years ago. It's just taken him a while for him to actually come through on that and realize and get to that in games.
Yeah, and I also kind of wonder, like, where does he fit in kind of long-term with this Mets team? He's played, you know, basically all shortstop throughout his minor league career. In the minor leagues, he only played shortstop, did play one game at second and 9 at third in the Dominican Winter League, but I'm kind of wondering, obviously, they have Lindor at shortstop, and Lindor is signed. Let me see when Lindor is signed through, I think, several more years, if I recall correctly. Let's see. Oh, yeah, plenty more years, through 2031, and I don't think Lindor is moving off of short anytime soon. So I wonder, Mauricio move over to second, maybe? Where do you see his long-term position, Chris? I'm kind of feeling second. Obviously, we got Beatty at third. I don't really see him moving to the outfield. Maybe Beatty does, and they put Mauricio at third and Beatty in left. I don't know.
I think kind of odd. I think his future's not with the Mets. I think they're going to trade him.
Yeah, that definitely could be. So especially if they keep having their arms go down this year.
Yeah, I mean, their arms are made of glass, and all of them are 35-plus years old. And can't stay healthy. So it seems like a prime sell opportunity if Mauricio rakes for a couple months in AAA needs to trade him. Like, I could see them trading him for a starter. And probably the best case for everybody in this situation, the Mets get their win now piece. Mauricio doesn't really fit in. Mauricio probably is a third baseman long term, but I think that that's Beatty's job. And so because of that, it's like, all right, I'll hedge my chances that the Mets just trade him, honestly. And I think that's what happens.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. A couple other middle infielders here. Lenin Sosa, Samad Taylor, Michael Garcia. These are names I throw on the list that aren't, you know, obviously these aren't the big sexy names, but they're all in AAA, performing well, and have a fairly clear path to playing time, or at least a path to playing time. Lenin Sosa has played, you know, both second and short this season in AAA. And, you know, as we know, Anderson has had some injury issues over the last handful of years. You know, Elvis Andrus is no lock to, you know, be good all year or stay healthy. But Sosa is crushing the ball. I mean, every time I look at, you know, the, you know, box scores and do my little daily prospect notes write up and look at the, you know, standout leaders from the previous day, like Sosa, his name keeps popping up. And so far, 462, 563, 885 slash line with 5 doubles, 2 home runs, and more walks than strikeouts. He got up to the major leagues for a little bit last year, didn't really do much, but coming off a very good season in the minor leagues last year, where he hit 315, 369, 511 with 23 home runs in 119 games, career 283 hitter in the minor leagues, where the power really came along last year. He's pretty sneaky. And same thing with Taylor and Michael Garcia. Maybe if Massey doesn't get it going here, they could, you know, move one of those guys or bring one of them up, play them at second base. They're both performing pretty well. Taylor's more of a speed guy. Both actually are pretty good speed guys. So kind of three kind of sneaky under the radar names just to keep an eye on right now.
So Michael Garcia is the guy that I want of this group and someone that I think could really be up soon. He's pretty special talent that's evolving, in my opinion. Like, he's kind of really coming into his own. I thought he was going to break camp with the Royals after a really good spring. And everybody kind of thought that too, especially considering he debuted at the end of last season and he hit 318 for him. Like, really strong contact skills. The question's always kind of been, where's his power? And last year, I mean, he hit 11 home runs between double and triple A, but his really high end aspect is his stolen bases. And last year, he stole 39 bases and was caught just 8 times. Good feel to hit. People have kind of been really jumping on this bandwagon. I won't say bandwagon, but it's kind of what it is. Like, he's becoming a dude. I really think they're keeping him down for service time. He had 15 days of service time last year. So if I read the tea leaves right, I think if they keep him down all of April, then they'll gain an extra year of service time with him. And I kind of think that's what they're doing. But Garcia plays short. It's where he's kind of been. He played there last year for the Royals. I mean, he's played there this year in AAA. He's played second base, but it's been a long time. But I do think the bat's going to play. He's made some strides with his power. Even though we've only seen one home run for him in 35 plate appearances, he's stolen 2 bases. He's slashing 400, 543, 640 in AAA. And again, this is with really high-end contact skills that he's doing this, but we've seen a new high max EV with him. He's a new max EV of 106.7 this year. His average EV on his 23 batted balls is 92.3. For somebody that doesn't have power, like, this is pretty strong early indication that he's growing into some power here. He doesn't chase at all. He doesn't swing and miss at all. I think Garcia is just a name to really buy into and a name that I think will take off. I'm looking to get him everywhere. Samad Taylor screams to me like utility guy, but Michael Garcia screams everyday player, and I just really think that's going to be the case. He's going to find an everyday spot with the Royals at some point. Now, the question is, where does he fit? Because you have a guy named Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop. Could Bobby Witt Jr. go to third again? I doubt they do that, but third base is currently occupied by Hunter Dozier, who's just not good. We've seen several other guys play some third too, Nicky Lopez. Like, it feels like Michael Garcia is going to come up and play third base for them. And I think this path's really evolving and somebody that I really want on my teams. And I think you can get him still pretty cheap in Dynasty League. So I'd be doing that.
Yeah, no, he's definitely undervalued. I think all him and Sosa are pretty undervalued. And yeah, I definitely like them more than Samad Taylor. But hey, if Taylor does get a shot, you know, he has pretty good speed and a little bit of pop. You know, maybe he's an 8-10 home run guy over a full season. But you know, definitely just names to keep an eye on and see if they do get a shot here at some point over the first half of the season. A couple more names here. We got Nolan Jones off to a hot start as well, hitting a ton of home runs so far. Bo Naylor's off to a really good start as well, kind of doing more Bo Naylor things, walking more on these, striking out, hitting for a little bit of power as well. Hopefully, we were kind of hoping he'd be up to start the year. Wasn't the case. They brought in, who did they bring in? Was it Mike Zunino they brought in there? Yeah, Mike Zunino for whatever reason. But Bo Naylor, I think, is back up fairly early. And then Matthew Liberatore as well, another guy that I was kind of critical of. I used to love Liberatore. Then I kind of soured on him because it was like, all right, good breaker and mediocre kind of everything else. Changeup was kind of meh. Fastballs get hit around way too much. But changeup looks better this year. He performed well in spring training. Velocity's up. Looked well both of his outings in AAA so far. And they're throwing out, you know, Jake Woodford in St. Louis. So I think we could see Liberatore back up pretty soon and maybe have some mixed league appeal there too.
Yeah, so I had zero interest in Liberatore until spring training, and he just basically kind of reinvented himself a bit.
Right.
I was like, oh, I'm really interested here in Liberatore as he's, you know, added velocity on his fastball. He's getting more movement with his pitches, and you know, the fastball sitting like 95-90 and his sinker up to 96 now, like we never saw that from him, and that's like really good stuff to see. Like, I was really intrigued when I started seeing that in spring training, and it's continued over. And I don't know. Like, I really think that Liberatore could be something now. Like, he's getting good swinging strike rates on his four seam. Curveball is obviously his bread and butter, and he's just dumping it and getting guys to, you know, get massive swings on it. But when I look and see that you have a 31.5% CSW on the four seam and a 31% CSW on your sinker, which sinker's a contact pitch, keeping the ball on the ground with that curveball, I don't know. I just think that Liberatore reinvented himself this year, and it's really going to pay off for him. So yeah, I'm 100% back in on him, and I think he does have redraft mixed league appeal. I think he's going to be in the Cardinals rotation before long. We've already seen him debut. So like you said, they're not going to keep running Jake Woodford out there, I don't think. If they're serious about winning, like, I think Liberatore gives them the best chance. So I would guess that's what they go with. We'll see, but I'm really in on this.
You said it perfectly. I kind of had the same thoughts too. Like, again, used to be pretty high on Liberatore, then over time slowly faded, and was pretty out. I dropped him way down my prospect rankings, way down my dynasty rankings. But yeah, came into velocity like a new look Liberatore, added velocity. Curveball was still, you know, as elite as ever, and I think that you could see him miss more bats with that this year. Changeup looked, you know, he's solid enough. So, but that fastball was the real, you know, kind of improvement was that fastball. He was just hit around way too much. Didn't have great velocity, didn't have great command, but everything has looked better on every facet of the fastball. And, you know, again, performing well so far in AAA. He's had two outings on the 31st against Charlotte and on the 6th of April against Nashville. Both times, 5 innings, 0 runs, 2 walks, 7 Ks. 7 hits allowed total in the 10 innings. So 14 strikeouts so far in 39 batters face. So he's over a 30% strikeout rate so far. Yeah, definitely very encouraging. I think we can see him back up sooner rather than later. And one name I realized I didn't add, Chris, that I meant to add, and he's not a prospect anymore, but I think it'd be remiss if we didn't say something about the absolutely ridiculous tear that Joe Adell is on right now, where he's hitting, I think he had, 7 home runs in the last 6 days, including home run in, at least one home run in 6 straight games. He's cut the K rate. I mean, I don't know if I want to believe in this. Like, he's tugged at the heartstrings so many times before, Chris, for all of us, right? Like, I think everyone and their mother has been in on Joe Adell at one point or another if you play fantasy baseball. Are you buying in at all? I mean, this does feel a little different. I mean, in the past, when he'd be on the hot streaks, K rate would still be high, right? Now it's not as high. But again, it's been, you know, a week and a half, small sample size. But are you taking anything from this?
I don't want to. I mean,
I know, dude. I don't want to. He's burned me so many times.
Yeah, I mean, he's hitting the ball hard. He's kind of doing everything you want to see. He's not chasing a ton. And like you said, the strikeouts, he's not swinging and missing as much either. So I don't know. Like, I don't want to buy in. I don't know. I'm torn. Right now, I'm not in. I will say I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to fall for it. But he's certainly making it hard not to. But I feel like this is always the case where he's going to come up and struggle again in the majors. He goes back down and dominates AAA against like mediocre pitching. And that's my concern, is that he just comes back up again and he struggles. So I just can't get myself to buy back in. And I hate that, but that's just kind of where I am on him.
No, I'm the same way. Every time I want to get back in on him, like right now, I look back at last year in the major leagues where he had 107 strikeouts to 11 walks. Yeah. And even in spring training, yeah, he had 4 home runs and 51 plate appearances in spring training. Great. But he also hit 229 with 22 strikeouts to 2 walks. So that's over a 40% K rate. So basically similar K rate and walk rate to where he was last year. And it wasn't even against like great quality, you know, opponent quality either. So I look back at those two and just his struggles in general. I mean, over a full year, like you give him 600 plate appearances, he could crank 40, but it might be like Chris Davis levels where it's like, oh, 180 average along with it and a 38% K rate or something like that. And I don't think the Angels are going to do that. So, I mean, I'm keeping an eye on it. I'll say that. But I'm in terms of buying back in, I need more than a week and a half for that. But I'll definitely just keep an eye on it, see how long this goes for and how long this torrid stretch can last. All right, let's go up to the major league level for the Los Angeles Angels and talk about some Logan Ohapi, man. Like, I know Ohapi's been a guy that both Chris and I have been very much in on for a very long time, ever since we saw him in the 2021 Arizona Fall League. And last year performed very well in the upper minors, came up for a cup of coffee, and then he's now had 3 home runs and 9 RBI his first 7 games of the season. He's tied for the Angels team lead in RBI. I think he's actually taken the lead for the team in RBIs with the 9 there. He's slugging well over 600, ISO well over 300. I know it's still early, and I'm expecting him to, jump up to an elite catcher, but long-term, Chris, like, I think he could be a top 10 fantasy catcher. I mean, this is a guy that looks like he could be like a 260 or better hitter, with a good OBP as well. He could be like a 340, 350 OBP, something like that. And I think over a full season as a starting catcher, I think 25 plus home runs aren't out of the equation with, maybe 75, 80 RBI. Like, that puts you top 10 in that second tier of catchers. I think he could definitely get up there. And, long term, I'm starting to wonder, is he going to be better than Francisco Alvarez long term? I don't know. Alvarez has a little bit more power, but Ohapi has, a better hit tool. So I think at the very least, these two aren't far off long term. And I know that's people probably yelling at me over, for that, but I'm just so in on Ohapi right now.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I think that he does kind of everything you want him to do. He has solid across the board. He's getting the good power. And the contact skills, you look at the contact numbers and they're not great, but his contact numbers in the minors were certainly better than this. But it hasn't really proven to be an issue so far. I'm pretty in on Ohapi. He keeps the K rates manageable. He walks at a serviceable clip. I don't know. I think you're right. I just wonder if he is just kind of what everybody hopes that Francisco Alvarez will be, with a little better hit tool. Now, Alvarez will have more power than Ohapi, but Ohapi's actually, I think he's going to make it pretty interesting. He's showing some really good power so far, and I'm honestly buying it. Like, I think this is a top 10 fantasy catcher.
And this is the type of trade that I love to make. Like, let's say you have Alvarez in Dynasty League. I love making these types of trades where I think the perceived value gap between these two is a lot larger than the actual value gap. So if I had Alvarez and I could go to the person that has Ohapi, and maybe, I'll give you Alvarez, you give me Ohapi, and I think you could probably get back another pretty decent second piece, and maybe like a top 100 prospect or another solid major leaguer or something like that. I think you can get back a good second piece. So for a guy that I think could be just as good or close to it to the guy you're giving up. So I love making those types of trades. I think it's definitely worthwhile. As I think, and I think these two are going to be fairly close long-term. I'm definitely buying Ohapi everywhere I can right now before that value kind of catches up to where it should be. All right, another one out there on the other Los Angeles team, James Outman just continues to tear the cover off the ball. You know, we've seen what he's capable of in the minor leagues. This is a guy that went over 30 home runs and over 10 steals. Last year, before that, he was over 20-20. Or was it, no, was it 18-23? What was it, 18-23 year before that? I mean, what was the exact power speed year before that? It was, yeah, 18-23 in 2021 and 31-13 last year. Although the K rate was a little bit high, not like crazy high, but the swing and miss, you know, the contact skills are kind of worth the question. But he walks a good amount. And so far, he's doing basically carbon copy of everything he did in the minor leagues. And then some, 3 home runs and a steal, 7 walks to 11 strikeouts so far in 9 games. Do you think, like, well, let's look long-term, Chris, like, how high in rankings do you think Outman can get? Do you think he could be like a top 100 dynasty guy someday? I think that's definitely a possibility.
I'm not sure. I mean, he's almost 26 right now. So it's not like he's, if this was like a 22-year-old, then I would say like probably. I think everybody's like concerned he can't hit lefties. I'm not that concerned actually, because he's not been bad against lefties. Not obviously a large sample, but he's had 5 plate appearances against them hitting 500. He has a home run against a lefty as well, just 1 strikeout. So there are strikeout concerns with Outman. He does swing and miss some, but he does make good zone contact, which makes up for it. It's like, while his O's, like his out of zone contact is not good, his zone contact is good enough to help make up for that. And it just, in general, gives him a boost. I think with Outman, we are looking at plus power and speed, but I'd say his batting average is probably going to be well below average. I mean, he's K rate right now of 35.5% while still running a 348 batting average. Probably not going to stay that consistent. And last year we saw him at 29% in AA and 25% in AAA. So, but I do think this is a player that can live with a higher strikeout rate. He may hit you 240, but there's 25 home run pop, 10 stolen bases probably in there. And that's pretty valuable, even if he does hit 240. And I would guess that his average is going to be higher if he does manage to hit 25 home runs, just to kind of make up for that a little bit and give him that little boost. So, yeah, I think Outman is probably a top 200 guy, maybe a little bit higher, but I certainly do believe in this profile, and I am buying him.
Yeah, and I want to make it clear, like, because everybody was confusing. I didn't say top 200 right now. Like, I think he could be top 100 at some point down the road. And, yeah, the issue is lefties, I think, are overblown. Like, even last year, slashing against lefties was 236, 325, 414. And, you know, that's not, like, really terrible against, you know, the same hand, like 236, 325, 414. So ISO close to 200, struck out 48 times in 160 plate appearances. That's not terrible for a lefty against lefties. And he absolutely just killed righties, 324, 425, 665. Yeah, I think 2510 is definitely kind of right in that range. And I think 240 is on the in the range of outcomes as well. I think he could hit 250, 255 maybe. I think kind of 260 is where I'm capping it at the high end. But if he's in that 250 range, 2510, I think he could maybe get to top 100-ish levels. We'll see. And if he's still with the Dodgers at that point in time, even if he's sitting a little bit lower in the lineup, you know, fair amount of runs in RBI as well. So, yeah, Outman is a very fun player. But right now, would you look to capitalize on the hype right now and maybe sell high, Chris? Or would you hold?
I mean, I think it is a possible sale, depending on what you can get. I'm always looking to cash out when I feel like value or players being talked about a ton and there's a ton of value. Yep. And that's really the case right now with Outman. There is a lot of hype. So yeah, I do believe that this could be a time to at least look and see what you can get for him. And yeah, at least put it out there and see, because I think you could probably grab something pretty decent for him.
Yeah. Can't hurt to at least explore that opportunity for sure. All right, let's close out the show talking about two very exciting. Well, one of them's young. The other one is, well, how old is the other one? Lodolo and Pablo Lopez are the two names here. How old is Pablo Lopez? I don't know. I think I'm going to be
27, maybe.
Okay, 27. Yeah, he is 27. Okay, I was like, I was going to call him young. He's not old, but he's not young. Kind of medium age for, but again, two guys that are off to very, very good starts. Let's start with Nick Lidl, though, through his first two starts of the year. And this was like a popular breakout pick by, you know, everyone for the most part, after kind of what he showed last year and the stuff and the minor league pedigree and all that. Two starts, .150 ERA, 117 whip, 21 strikeouts in 12 innings, 41.2% strikeout rate, 7.8% walk rate. And this is after having a 29.7% K rate last year and a 20.9 K minus walk rate. A guy that can get ground balls as well. Over 45% last year, 50% so far, which is huge. Like, limiting walks and keeping the ball in the yard is huge for a Cincinnati pitcher. That's why I've always kind of leaned Lodolo over Green. I still do right now. We'll talk about Green probably in a later episode. But yeah, Lodolo just looks so damn good to start the year. Curveball, 46% whiff rate. Changeup has a 40% whiff rate. Even the fastball is a 33% whiff rate so far. Even though he's down a little bit in velocity, but only a mile an hour. Not overly concerned by that, but looking really good with that three-pitch mix, mixing the sinker in, you know, sporadically as well. But really those first three, and if he's missing bats that much with the changeup as well, that becomes like a weapon against right-handed batters. He's even going to be even more lethal. So I think he could be, I don't know about a fantasy ace, but maybe close to it. Maybe he gets into like that Max Fried range where it's like that, you know, SP 15 to 20 range or so, but. What are your thoughts so far on Lodolo, Chris?
Yeah, I do think Lodolo could be like Max Fried with more K upside. Like that wouldn't surprise me at all if he did that. And that's a really intriguing player. I'm really in on Lodolo. The whiff rates are there. I mean, he struck out guys last year. You mentioned that he does a good job of keeping the ball in the park. So overall, it's like, yeah, I think that this could be the year he takes off. And yeah, I mean, calling him a breakout this offseason was whatever, because it's like, all right, of course. Like,
yeah, who was calling him a breakout?
Yeah, I mean, he was a borderline top 100 pick. So to me, it's like, that's not really, you know, he is a breakout, but he's not like a sleeper. Like, I think people want to like talk about him like he was a sleeper.
Right.
And that just wasn't the case. Like, he's much better than that. But with that being said, it wouldn't surprise me a bit if he really does take off and ends up being an SP1 caliber pitcher, and I could 100% buy that right now. I'm on board with it, and if you can somehow still get him in a dynasty league, I would try my best to do so.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Let's go with a little of the who you got. Yeah, I love playing this game. So who would you take dynasty long-term, Chris? Lodolo or the lefty we talked about last episode in Jesus Luzardo?
I think I'm going Lodolo. He's a little more consistent, a little more trustworthy, but I do like both.
I agree. I've moved to Lodolo. He's about 15 spots ahead of Luzardo in my overall, but both definitely on the rise pretty quickly. Lodolo or George Kirby?
I think I'm still leaning Kirby, but I wouldn't be surprised if Lodolo has more upside.
Agreed. Yeah, I actually said they're three spots apart in my overall. Lodolo or Christian Javier?
That's interesting. Now it's more interesting than it was. Javier's velo has me concerned a bit. So I think right now I'm still going to say Javier, but it's fairly close.
Yeah, same here. Let's see any? I guess okay. Let's do it. Let's do Lodolo or Fried.
It's still Fried for me. It's just been so consistent year over year, but I think that the upside's there for Lodolo.
Last one, Lodolo or Grayson Rodriguez?
I'd rather have Lodolo.
All right, there you go. Well, fun little game of who you got. And then the other pitcher here, Pablo Lopez, he's really interesting because, you know, we've seen him have some kind of hot stretches before and he falls off, but this one feels a bit different. It's because it's a different looking Pablo Lopez this year. Four-seamer has added about 2 miles an hour of velocity. It was 93.6 last year, 95.5 this year. He added the sweeper. I know who didn't add a sweeper, but his sweeper has been really freaking good this year. Has not given up a hit yet and has a 60.7% whiff rate on the offering, and he's using it second most of all of his pitches, 27.7% of the time. That's great to see. And so, again, with the added velocity as well, and that's substantial, 2 miles an hour. Sinker's up 1.4. And I think he's showing a more balanced arsenal. Last year, he got pretty fastball, changeup heavy. That was about 74% of his pitches, mixing cutter, sinker, curve, all around 8-9%. This year, he's at four-seam, about 34.5%, sweeper, 27.5%, changeup, 16%, sinker, 15%, and curveball at 6%. So a more balanced arsenal, and it's led to a very hot start. 0.73 ERA through two starts, 0.73 whip, 16 Ks in his 12 and a third innings, 36.4% K rate, which I know two starts, but easily would be the best of his career. Previous career high, 27.5%. So this feels different, Chris. Like, this feels like a kind of a revamped new look Lopez, and I'm definitely buying it. He needs to stay healthy, but I don't know about ace, but I think he could definitely cement himself as like a really good SP2.
Yeah, and that's where I'd look at him too. You highlighted all the changes that he made, but the revamped arsenal is massive for him, and I think that's really going to carry him. Everything I've watched and seen, like you said, he's a different pitcher. He's with a team that's going to win games, and that also matters too. Like, when you go on the mound and you're confident in what you have behind you. I mean, the Marlins are running out like 12 second basemen around the field. So now that he's got a defense and he's got a good offense behind him, it's like, all right, I feel like he can really get behind this, and he has an incentive to, you know, really go out and perform. And as you mentioned, increasing your velocity 2 miles an hour is pretty huge. Like, that's really notable. And because of that, like, I think that we're looking at a pretty special arm that's pretty trustworthy here.
Yeah. Again, this needs to stay healthy, but if he can, I think he's going to be, you know, top 25 or so arm moving forward. All right. That's going to wrap us up for this episode. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, check out all of our work over on Chris's Substack, my Patreon, and over at RotoBall or FTN for me, and Fantasy Pros for Chris as well. We really appreciate all of your support on all those platforms. We're pumping out a lot of content every single day, rankings, you know, daily write-ups, a lot of fun stuff over on both of our platforms as well. And join us again next time for more fantasy baseball talk. But until then, everyone take care.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with two for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.